Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on government intrusion upon liberty and individual rights right after this. You know, we Americans talk a lot about private business, and we use terms like private ownership, private property, private rights. But we also use terms like stocks, bonds, negotiable instruments, licenses, and permits in our pursuit of profit and gain in our business transactions. Well, listen to this. Did you know that stocks and negotiable instruments are the exact opposite to private ownership? Bonds are the exact opposite to private property. Public business licenses are the exact opposite to private rights. And permits are the exact opposite to private business. And why is it that we see small business being subjected to such a constant barrage of attacks by government at every level, from Washington to your hometown? And what can we do to protect our lives, our liberties, and our properties from all of these incessant attacks by government agencies like OSHA and the EPA, or the State Tax Commission and Zoning and Planning, the IRS, and the swarms of government agents and agencies who are eating out our substance? Well, you know, there's a lot that we can do, and the first step is to inform ourselves as to the legal alternatives that we have between public business and private business. Now, if you'd like to learn more about this thing called private business, why don't you call and order a free general law CD package? And let me tell you more about what it is that you're not supposed to know about private business. It's educational, it's entertaining, it's informative. Best of all, it's free. You can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. Just click on to the section that has the free educational package, and download it yourself. That's just how easy that is. Now, if you're out in the countryside and you don't have a computer and you're not on the email line, and you can't get it that way, that's fine. Just give us a call on the telephone. And if you don't have a telephone, that's fine. Just send us a letter, Post Office Box 297, Isabella, Missouri 65676. Once more, that's George Gordon, P.O. Box 297, Isabella, I-S-A-B-E-L-L-A, Missouri 65676. And we'll send you one, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about this thing of the threat analysis. It's a section written by Joel Skousen dealing with government intrusion upon liberty and individual rights. And oftentimes people call here and say, Mr. Gordon, we got to get the word out. We got to tell people about the Federal Reserve. And then I sit back and I kind of wonder about that and want to get the word out. What are you going to tell these people? You want to go down here to Skeeter's? Now, that's a restaurant we have here in Gainesville. We walk into Skeeter's, and then we can stand on a soapbox and start telling all of the farmers and the waitresses and the cooks and everybody in there about the Federal Reserve isn't federal, it's a private bank, it's a consortium of bankers, and they're robbing us blind. Who in the hell's going to believe your story even if you went in and told them? The people of America don't want to hear it to start with. I mean, it's like having a Mormon knock on your door. Hell, we didn't want to hear this. If we would have wanted to hear this, we would have went to Mormon church, wouldn't we? You know, not to offend you Mormons or anything, but hey, you know, if I wanted to listen to Jehovah's Witness religion, I'd go to Jehovah's Witness Church. If I wanted to listen to Mormon religion, I'd go to Mormon Church. I don't need anybody knocking on my door and telling me what they think about religion or politics or anything else. In fact, I don't like it. And that's why I don't run around trying to tell people that I think that they need to do this, that, or something else. Hell, I don't know hardly what's good for me, much less what's good for you. So as a reporter, I just like to report on facts and tell you, well, listen to this. Did you know that this is going on? Are you interested in that? And then if you're not, you can just turn the radio dial. Hell, I don't take anything. You don't need to listen to me for crying out loud, and I don't care whether you do or not. There's no skin off my back one way or the other. They're not making me my living, and I'm not making you yours, and so you can go your way and I'll go mine. Now, if there's something that we can both share and it has some value to one or the other of us, you know, I don't mind telling you, well, let me give you this information. That's why I'm here today. I picked up a book called Strategic Relocation. It's written by a guy named Joel Skousen. This guy's a conspiracy theorist. He's one of them conspiracy nuts. He thinks that there's a bunch of people out there that are up to no good, and most of them hold high public office in the Congress of the United States, the White House, the Supreme Court. And so when I read that paragraph, I said, well, I agree with him, and I do too. So there's two of us, in case you were wondering how many. There's two, Skousen and Gordon. Now, I've never met this guy Skousen, so I'm not over here touting, you know, Joel Skousen, and I'm sure he's not touting me. I read his book, and I think he's got a lot of good material here, and so I thought I'd share that with you. Now, this is called Strategic Relocation, North American Guide to Safe Places, and he has a wild new idea. Get the hell out of the way. And I thought about that, and I said, you know, that makes a lot of sense. Get off the tracks. That's all. Just get the hell off the tracks. Train's coming through. Ain't no point in getting killed in the process. So I thought I'd read a couple of sections. Last week I told you about nuclear war. I think the guy's right on point. I think nuclear war is coming, and he said, here's why I think it's coming. Here's why I think it's assured. Can't miss. I told you that story. Now he's got a second story to tell. He says, the people of America cannot understand the worldwide conspiracy. Number one, they're not interested in it. Number two, even if they were interested in it, they haven't got the sophistication or the education to understand it. There isn't anything they can do about it after they understand it and after you tell them. So you didn't need to say anything to them. No need. It's just a waste of your time. It's the old story of trying to teach a pig to sing. There's no point in trying to teach a pig to sing because it wastes your time and it annoys the pig. There isn't anybody going to be happy out of this program. Now, Skousen comes up to the section here on the education connection. He says, you know, people's natural aversion to the free market, a one-way system of corruption. He talked about the five levels of the conspiracy, fourth level, third level, second level, you know, covered that for you. Now we're up here to education. These conspirators have to control education, and they do. They've done a marvelous job. They've taken over education, and they control it, and they teach you, and they teach me and everybody else what to think and how to think. And they're teaching your children the same thing. You know, they've got all of us practicing communism. They got all of us sending our children to public school, which is the 10th plank to the Communist Manifesto. They got us all paying income tax, which is the second plank, using phony baloney paper money from our central bank, which is the 5th plank. And we all have social security numbers, which is the 8th plank. And we're all paying inheritance tax, and that's the 3rd plank. I mean, come on. We're all practicing communists. That's what they've taught us to do. That's what we're all doing. And we think it's capitalism. We call this the capitalist way because we live in America, Canada, or Australia. It isn't the capitalist way. It is the communist way. And so I thought I'd just throw that one out there. Here's the 10th plank to the Communist Manifesto. It's on page 151 here. He says, as mentioned briefly before, conspiracies that want to control a democracy must control two aspects of life in order to keep the majority dumbed down and manageable. Education, number one, and the sources of news and information, number two. So it's public school and the media. They have to control those two. And they do. They do a great job. With these two, one can selectively propagandize with half-truths and some falsehoods from childhood through adulthood. Mandatory public schooling is an essential part of this. Giving public schools a monopoly on tax funds is also important because it makes it too expensive for parents to opt out of the system. Through ideological control of public curriculums, most people can be persuaded to accept untrue ideas about life, law, people, and government. Effectively opposing these arguments and critical views can be avoided by simply omitting them or ridiculing them. Mostly they're omitted so that ideas are not planted in fertile minds. Now, while we're talking about education, I happened to pick up a book here when I saw this section here. It's called America to Pray or Not to Pray. Now, we've all been subjected to public school. We've all been subjected to evolution. And we've all been subjected to the idea that the Bible is phony. It's a lie. There is no God. We all evolved. Now, as a result of that, we now have a mindset. And there's an outcome that comes from it. Now, here in this book called America to Pray or Not to Pray, it's written by a guy named David Barton. David Barton. And he put a section in here about the sex education in public school. Now, there's a little bit to be said in the Ten Commandments about sex. There's a commandment that says, thou shalt not commit adultery. That there are limitations on sex that were set down by our Creator, set down by God. And he's on page 28 here, and he says, in 1988, California was considering adopting legislation on sex education for public schools, requiring that course material and instruction shall stress that monogamous heterosexual intercourse, that's one man and one woman, within marriage is a traditional American value. Well, the senator promoting the bill received a letter of protest from the ACLU, dated April 18, 1988. Here's what the ACLU had to say about it. They said, it is our position that monogamous heterosexual intercourse within marriage is a traditional American value, is an unconstitutional establishment of a religious doctrine in public school. There are various religions which hold contrary beliefs with respect to marriage and monogamy. We believe this bill violates the First Amendment. Now, students across the nation are being provided with materials in their sex education classes from groups like Planned Parenthood, materials containing photographs, illustrations, and graphics encouraging and demonstrating premarital sexual relations for adolescents. Consider these mild excerpts from books and materials that Planned Parenthood and similar groups recommend for adolescents. So you're sending your child to public school. She's 13, 14, 15 years old, and she needs to learn sex education. The state says she does. The ACLU says she should not learn thou shalt not commit adultery. That's bad for her. But it's good for her to learn the following. Here's what it says about girls and sex. Girls understand now that they are far more likely to make good social and sexual adjustments to life if they learn to be warm, open, responsive, and sexually unafraid. They're learning to be sexual partners of men. Everyone's agreed that teenage sex should be a learning experience. Sex play with boys can be exciting, pleasurable, and even worthwhile. It will help later sexual adjustment. There are only two basic kinds of sex, sex with victims and sex without. Sex with victims is always wrong. Sex without is always right. One way to avoid having victims is, of course, to have sexual relationships only with your friends. The great orgasm robbery. Sex is fun and joyful, and it comes in all types and styles, all of which are okay. Do what gives pleasure and enjoy what gives pleasure and ask for what gives pleasure. Don't rob yourself of joy of focusing on old-fashioned ideas about what's normal or nice. Okay? Now, that's what your daughter is learning in public school. That's filth. It's perversion. It violates the seventh commandment. And the creator of the universe said, don't do that. Now, I think most of us know right from wrong. We're not deaf, dumb, and blind. But we have turned a blind eye to our public schools. And we tolerate our public schools teaching our children this kind of filth and perversion. And there's a result that comes from it. That's why 70-some percent of Americans, when Bill Clinton and Monica Lewinsky were getting it on in the Oval Office, thought that that was okay. What's wrong with that? And after all, they learned it in public school, didn't they? And when you send your children to public school, your children then get the idea that it must be right because my parents approve of it. So you've got teachers teaching this sexual perversion, and then you've got parents that approve of it. And more likely, you people probably do approve of it. Now, there's an outcome that comes from that. And that outcome is going to be all bad, all bad. And our society shows that. So I just thought I'd report on it. Now there's a media connection here. Skousen points this out. Very little of this conspiracy can be traced specifically because it was done in secret and with private buyouts that were perfectly legal. Leftist educators and leftist journalists working together in formal and informal ways to break down the conservative power structure in America. To their favor, they found the opposition conservatives to be somewhat pompous, untrained, and arrogant in their use of money. Hegelian tactics for crisis control comes into play. It is toward the objective of the dismantling of national sovereignty and the establishment of world government that the conspiracies show their hand most frequently. It can be fairly easily traced when you study the history of almost all wars and changes in government that have occurred since before World War I. The theoretical pattern to look for is the dialectic or the Hegelian concept of controlling or creating a phony or false opposition. The careful creation of a crisis or conflict, and then controlling both sides of the conflict, to create a third separate desired solution or result, the socialist and globalist results, often labeled as highly controlled free trade. So here's the pattern. The target country has some form of strongman government, usually anti-communist, but almost always operating under some brand of socialism, often without even realizing what constitutes capitalism or socialism. So the conspiracy now finances, by way of the CIA or the State Department, an underground enemy movement, almost always Marxist. They arm it, they provide supplies for training, and then they set it off militarily against the target national government. They then begin a propaganda campaign through journalists and editors under their control. They do this to undermine the existing legitimate government so that Congress and other media sources begin to clamor for a cutoff of aid to this beleaguered government. This isn't too difficult, since these strong leaders always have some significant flaws, but they are infinitely preferable to the Marxist-Socialist guerrillas the conspiracy is secretly supporting. Now, as the military engagement continues, and when the guerrillas are usually on the run, the State Department liberals and yes-men intervene and demand a ceasefire, especially whenever the guerrillas are threatened by imminent defeat. In the negotiated peace settlement that follows, the United States uses extreme pressure to force the acceptance of a coalition government with conditions such as partial disarmament of the government forces while allowing the guerrillas to only feign disarmament. After a short-lived peace, the guerrillas stage a coup and take over the government. The U.S. encourages exile of the former leaders, and then suddenly we have a new People's Republic. This exact blueprint happened in many countries after World War I. Places like China, Laos, Vietnam, Cambodia, Iran, Cuba, Nicaragua, El Salvador, Guatemala, and the list goes on and on. If you want to read the horrible details, see the reading list in the appendix. Now, let's move on to world government. Eventually, after consolidating control in the United States and all of the major European powers, these secret conspiratorial powers began to concentrate on transitioning toward world government. War is the preferred Hegelian tactic, for only the horrors of war are capable of moving people to give up sovereignty. And even then, the conspirators have found that it takes many wars to break down sovereignty. So if you think World War I started because of the assassination of Archduke Ferdinand, you are mistaken. It was merely a pretense. It was the excuse. The war was planned. The advisors were worked into governments in England, France, and Germany to make sure that the proper antagonisms and irritations were sufficiently aroused to bring nations to the brink of war. It was very complex and took many years. After the war, the League of Nations failed to gain any progress toward world government and failed to gain approval of the U.S. Senate. So, it took an even larger war to push the world towards greater international interdependence. Now, once the financial powers in America and Europe had found their future protagonist in Adolf Hitler, trusted advisors to the German Kaiser engineered the worst economic inflation in German history. This was the crisis that would engender the seeds of communism and socialism in Germany. So, a fertile climate for Adolf Hitler emerged. Anthony Sutton's book, Wall Street and the Rise of Hitler, gives the evidence. Hitler's rise to power was no accident, nor was his takeover of the German government. It was financed by Wall Street in New York City. He had lots of help. The conspiracy really comes much more clearly into focus during these war years with the interaction of many Soviet agents within the Roosevelt administration. Agents like Harry Hopkins, Alger Hisk, Julius and Ethel Rosenberg, Harry Dexter White, and others with active collaboration of Eleanor Roosevelt. Even the president was involved in the conspiracy to provoke the bombing of Pearl Harbor, to change public opinion, and to get us involved in World War II. And you can read about that in Day of Deceit by Stinnett. However, the biggest manipulation of world events came during the prosecution of World War II itself. The evil compromises that took place at Tehran, Morocco, and Yalta between Roosevelt, Churchill, and Stalin demonstrated how manipulated Roosevelt was by his leftist advisors. Battle plans were altered to allow the Russians to win the race into many countries so they could control them after World War II. General Patton was held back in order to keep him from winning the war too soon. General Eisenhower, the loyal establishment yes man, dutifully turned all of the Eastern European refugees and prisoners of war over to the Russians at gunpoint after the war. Perhaps the blackest mark on his career. The operation was secretly named Operation Keel Hull. The entire development of the United Nations was an act of conspiracy, designed and carried out by Alger Hiss and his globalist counterparts. The UN action in Korea that kept General MacArthur from pursuing the war into China was a conspiracy that caused thousands of American and Korean deaths. The post-war takeover of the Republican Party from the Taft forces was a carefully crafted conspiracy bragged about for years afterwards by some of the leftist architects who switched parties in order to become advisors to the new Eisenhower team. Now, it turns out that Milton Eisenhower, the president's brother and chief advisor, was a globalist, keeping his brother in line. I think Eisenhower was a willing puppet for smarter men and not a knowing co-conspirator. John F. Kennedy was, in my opinion, the first president to be elected who actually knew that he was put into power by this powerful underground group. He was only a second-level person himself, however, and quite disposable, as we later found out. JFK was taken out by the very same leaders who put him in, and the job was carried out by a select group of dirty tricks players from the CIA, the Secret Service, and the FBI. This was the world's first good look at the workings of the conspiracy, and they made a lot of sloppy mistakes. But they got away with it, and they got away with it for only one reason. It's because they had enough control over the media and the members of the Supreme Court and the Congress and a host of others that they could cover it up. Now, their errors were huge, and they needed multiple cover-ups. Watching how they did it told me a lot about how extensive these underground powers are. So before I go into some details, let me backtrack and show how this gang of government hitmen operates in various parts of the federal security forces. And I call it the Good Old Boys Network. This is an amplification of the workings of Group 4, the corrupt law enforcement boys that do the dirty work for the controllers. They constitute what are referred to as the black sectors of our own government, and they are linked to a larger sector of the organized criminal world. This is one reason why the FBI maintains so many underworld contacts. It's not just for utilitarian purposes of tracking the underworld. They assist each other in numerous covert activities. Each of the federal services, the FBI, CIA, ATF, INS, and the Secret Service, have many good and patriotic people working for them. The good guys are the regular, naive, want-to-serve-my-country types who are assigned the legitimate tasks of government enforcement. Virtually every agency head knows about the black side of his organization. No one is allowed to run these agencies unless he can be trusted to execute the special orders that come down by way of discreet private channels. Upper-level managers who are part of the conspiracy are always watching and judging both the above-ground side of the covert black side to see who can be trusted to do corrupt work or who has to be removed. They look for signs of unprincipled behavior in those they invite to do the dirty trick stuff. These guys carouse, and they cheat regularly on their wives, and in short, they don't have any scruples about doing any job for money or future advancement. These are carefully cultivated and tested with a variety of semi-legal activities to make sure that they don't have much of a conscience. Once they enter the black underground, they enter the world of covert operations, but not just ordinary covert operations, because there are both legitimate and criminal types of operations performed by the same agency. Now, I don't have space in this book to detail all of the evidence for this, but I will tell you this. First of all, the CIA runs a worldwide drug distribution network to finance this black underground series of operations. Khun San, the infamous drug warlord of the Iron Triangle, testified of this openly, that his major client was the CIA, and he could name names. Barry Seal was killed after revealing his involvement in flying cargo planes loaded with drugs for the CIA into the famous Mena, Arkansas, 10,000-foot rural runway during Governor Clinton's term in Arkansas. Second, the FBI regularly assists and covers up for numerous illicit government operations. Occasionally, critical evidence is falsified in their now discredited forensics labs in order to alter the outcomes of certain investigations. The FBI played a major role in the cover-up of the JFK assassination and the Waco attack, the Oklahoma City bombing, and the Vince Foster murder. Three, the CIA and Secret Service agents who were part of the black underground side pulled off the assassination of John F. Kennedy. They also killed Bobby Kennedy, Martin Luther King, to make them martyrs for a much larger political purpose. The killers may not have known the purpose, but those who gave the orders did. Now, I only mentioned the drug CIA connection because it represents one of the big lies the government has always been involved in, pretending as if they were fighting an enemy that is, in fact, part of their own secret activities. Worse yet, the drug issue has been used extensively to justify the criminal racketeering legislation, such as RICO, that grants government its draconian powers of property and property confiscation without having to prove guilt. This is a grave violation of property rights, and liberty. The black side of government law enforcement has a yearly convention, an inter-service party, where they get together to exchange war stories and revel in their own powerful connections. Such conventions have been coordinated by the ATF in recent years, a natural choice given the high percentage of heavy-handed type agents in this service who delight in harassing and undermining Second Amendment gun rights. Hundreds of federal agents from all federal police agencies attend, but only those specifically invited know about it. I know about smaller but similar gatherings due to my conversations with an FBI informant that was once invited to attend. The public got a glimpse of this good old boy network after one particularly egregious gathering in 1990, where it was videotaped by one of the police newcomers. I think he thought it was funny, and the tape found its way into the media's hands in 1995. Nothing would have come of it except that there were a lot of racial gags and jokes going on at the party. These racial insults seemed to be the only aspect of this highly improper gathering that gave the media outrage. Obviously, the smell of secret gatherings of cross-agency hoodlums didn't bother them. The subsequent investigation revealed that this annual secret convention is called the Good Old Boys Roundup, and that it is by special invitation only. Members have a special ring which they wear occasionally when together. They have no secret codes and keywords that I know of, because everyone in the black groups is supposed to know the others by sight. For this and other reasons, I don't believe it's a cellular organization at the working end. That's only reserved for the top leaders at the high end. Their role and identity is deeply held secret. This mechanism of knowing who's who allows the black boys to intermingle freely with the regular types at work, and the good guys never know there is a separate organization. Now, I have talked with a number of CIA and FBI people of the sincere variety who simply can't believe that they wouldn't have seen something like this going on, but they don't see it. Their leaders always deny such activities when confronted directly. All right, it's midway time. I'm going to have to remind you that you are listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the internet and radio. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967 and just ask for it. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. Just click on to the right page, and you can download that free package right there in the privacy of your own home. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. We often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine, they're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or this local radio station. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Your call is directed 417-273-4967. All right, we're reviewing the book, Strategic Relocations, written by Joel Skousen. I'll give his name and number again. It's his telephone number is 801-224-4746. Again, that's area code 801-224-4746. The email is joels, joels at joelskousen.com. Once more, that's joels at joelskousen. That's all one word, joelskousen.com. You want to write to him. The address is 290 West, 580 South, Orem, Utah, 84058. Once more, that's 290 West, 580 South, in Orem, O-R-E-M, Utah, U-T-A-H, and the zip code is 84058. Now, oftentimes people will ask us, why don't we work harder to get more information out so that people can be informed, and then they will vote more intelligently? And so Joel Skousen wrote a section here, and he said, that's because most Americans don't care, don't have the character to be concerned, can't understand it because of lack of sophistication. It's like trying to teach a pig to sing. It wastes your time and it annoys the pig. So I've already taken that position over the years and said, there's no need going out here trying to tell everybody. A guy asked me one time, he said, are you trying to free the slaves? And I said, not at all. Absolutely not. And he asked me why, and I said, well, who's going to do the work if you free all the slaves? You need taxpayers. You need serfs that work, produce. I'm not here to free anybody. I'm just here to inform. Now, I mentioned to you the other day that there was a word called the watchman in Ezekiel. One of the major prophets was called the watchman. And today, the preachers who sit in your pulpits or stand in your pulpits hold the office of watchman. Your watchman, your preacher, your pastor, your father, your, the Holy Joe, the sky pilot. He should be telling you this. He should be in the pulpit on Sunday saying, hey, let me tell you about the sacred conspiracy. Let me tell you about Social Security. Let me tell you about the Federal Reserve System. Let me tell you about the skullduggery that went on with the Kennedy assassination and with the destruction of the trade towers in New York. But these watchmen are bought and paid for. They're bought and paid for whores. Nothing more, nothing less. They claim that they represent God Almighty, but if you read on, God says, I never sent these fools. They don't represent me. They are liars. They're frauds. They're charlatans. They are wolves in sheep's clothing. That's your watchman. So if you're waiting for your watchman to give you the warning, I think you're going to die young. As I used to say, let's all smoke another weed and live hard, die young, and leave beautiful memories. Now, there's a personal experience with the black side of government, and this is Joel Skousen again. He says, I ran into the black side through an MD client of mine. He had a patient who was a Latino informant for the FBI, tracking communist activity and infiltration within certain Latino organizations. His FBI handler turned out to be one of those on the black side. The informant showed some signs, apparently, that he might be good black side material, so he got invited to one of these interagency parties by his handler. Under the influence, the FBI man bragged to him that no one, not even Congress, knew of their existence, that they had their own secret financial sources that came from drug funds. The informant noticed that they were all wearing the same class ring. Now I'm going to get the right page here. Page 154. The same class ring. Let's see where we're at here. Media connection. John F. Kennedy. I'm getting the wrong page here. Here we go. Now, during the next few months, the informant did pick up some significant intelligence about communist control of this Latino group, and he began reporting it to his handler. Just as the material was getting particularly hot, that is damaging to the communists and some high-placed local politicians, the FBI agent told him to quit and to back off the case. Being a very patriotic guy, the informant decided to continue on his own. He was intrigued by the sudden unexplained orders to quit just when the proof was building. So he continued his surveillance and began secreting away his own private copies of all of his work. Naively, he told the agent of some of his latest finds. Then the tables were turned on him. Suddenly, his handler began to investigate him in a hostile manner. Payments had stopped almost 6 months previously, and the agent started stonewalling about his back pay. He was asked to turn in all of his records, including some secret FBI files on this organization that he had been allowed to see and use. He handed them over, but he didn't reveal that he had made some copies. Finally, the informant decided to go to the FBI headquarters in Dallas to see about his money and to get an explanation about the sudden change in procedures. They claimed they didn't know who he was, and they sent him away. That's when I got called to see if I could help. Well, at the time I was living in Washington, D.C., at the time, then I had contacts in the CIA and the NSC. I interviewed the informant in his native language so I could get a sense for his sincerity. I believed he was telling the truth. Moreover, once I saw the copies of his FBI files and evidence collected, I knew that he was onto something hot. But by this time, the FBI was denying his existence. The handler had now claimed that all the files the informant gave him were stolen out of his car, along with his gun and badge while in a restaurant. Now, my father was an FBI agent, so I knew immediately that this was preposterous. No agent leaves all those things in the back seat of his car. So when I went back to Washington and asked my CIA friend to make some inquiries with his buddies at the FBI headquarters, I gave him the informant's secret code name just to show him that we had a real live informant we were dealing with and not some crazy man. Now, remember, this is supposed to be one of many thousands of lowly informants that the FBI uses. Well, my CIA friend said that it was highly unlikely that anyone at FBI headquarters would know about this guy's case, especially if the Dallas office was trying to make it go away. So he called me back very quickly and said that as soon as he uttered the guy's code name, all hell broke loose at the FBI. They knew of this case and all too well, and immediately began to grill my CIA friend about how he found out about this guy's code name. They wanted to squelch this badly, and they started tracing the chain backward. My friend said that somewhat frantically that he was going to have to tell them my name or he would get into trouble. I said, fine, tell them. I was anxious to have the FBI come over so that I could check them out. Well, two bright young FBI agents showed up in an hour. They were obviously on the good team and were just there on orders to get information. All they were interested in is how I found out about this and who else knows. I could tell by their intensity that they had been duly impressed on how important it was to get the requisite information or somebody's head was going to roll. I said I first wanted some commitments from the Bureau about getting this man paid, but they obviously had no interest in this line of discussion. One of the agents asked to see my phone, and I could overhear an intensive conversation going back and forth, someone pushing hard on the other line and the agent trying to explain why he couldn't get me to tell. They finally left in frustration. Well, to make a long story short, the Bureau started a manhunt for this informant. In order to save himself, he took his story to the Dallas Morning News and threatened to publish it all if they didn't back off. They didn't. And so the reporters published the whole story. The leftist press was having a field day at the FBI's expense, painting a corrupt picture of the FBI, taking advantage of a poor Latino, and spying on innocent Latino pressure groups. The handler was given an indefinite leave of absence from the Bureau. My doctor friend was able to find out that within a couple of weeks, this handler showed up working as a top-level manager, six-figure income, at a big international insurance agency in Seattle. He had no previous background in insurance. Now tell me how that happens except by big connections with big government and the underworld. He is now back in the federal government after having been sanitized for a few years. The good old boys take care of their own. Now there's a case history of an actual experience that Skousen had because his father was an FBI agent. Skousen was a major in the military. There are a lot of people out here in the real world that are honest, faithful people who have character. They're few and far between, no doubt about that, but there's whistleblowers out there. But the majority of Americans are not interested in that, which is why people without character don't need to be informed about little trivial things like the Federal Reserve or the FBI or the Kennedy assassination or the Twin Towers or the War on Terror. What good would it do? So when people say to me that we need to get the word out and we need to write letters to our senators and representatives, what the hell for? They're all in on it. Not all of them, but many of them are. As I said before, this train is coming down the tracks and we're headed for a great blowout. It's an inevitability. Most of the people of America have hope that President Obama is going to bail this thing out and all of this bad news is going to go away. It isn't. Get ready. It's going to get worse. And you need to be prepared for it. And this guy Skousen says, get off the tracks. That's the first step. Get out of harm's way. Now, watching for cover-ups as evidence of a conspiracy. You know, in a cover-up, government agents, policemen, military officers, medical personnel, and a host of other people have to be involved to silence the truth. Take that Abu Ghraib prison event here a few years back. President Bush and the highest echelons of government knew all about that. But when it was all said and done, it was 4 or 5 Army enlisted people that did the whole thing. This thing of torturing people in order to extort confessions from them, whether it's right or wrong or good or bad. Listen, if you're torturing them, why don't you come right up front and say, yes, we use torture as a means of exacting information. We think it's the right thing to do. Why not come up front and tell us that? No, they lied about it and said, no, we don't torture anybody. We call this enhanced interrogation. Boys and girls, enhanced interrogation is torture, pure and simple. Now, if you're all in favor of torture, why don't you stand up and get counted? I'm in favor of torture. I think it's the greatest thing since sliced white bread. Or stand up and say, no, I think it's demeaning and I don't think we ought to engage in it. But that's not what George Bush and company did, was it? Now, these cover-ups always occur whenever the government has to do some criminal act in public, or at least when the suspicions of foul play reach the public. Now, witnesses who observe governmental criminal activity have to be threatened, silenced, bought off, or convinced that they didn't see what they saw. Innocent government personnel personal recording events in their normal line of duty have to be sworn to secrecy. The fact that the government often has legitimate reasons to keep things secret is often used by these innocent government workers to suppress their normal misgivings. They are, in fact, taught never to question why something is ruled secret. I will not cover any of these cover-ups in any depth except the assassination of President Kennedy and 9/11. Volumes have already been written about these cover-ups. Some of the bigger cover-ups since JFK were the Martin Luther King assassination and subsequent stealing of the FBI files on King's raunchy and leftist antics, the Robert F. Kennedy assassination, the POW MIA cover-up, the downing of KAL Korean Airlines Flight 007 en route to Korea, the MENA, Arkansas drug smuggling by the CIA, and the subsequent murder of Barry Seal. The Lockerbie, Scotland terrorist bombing of Pan Am Flight 103. There is a CIA assassination and drug smuggling connection here. The cover-up of the causes of the Gulf War syndrome and its relation to experimental vaccines. The INS Border Patrol cover-up of knowledge of semi-truckloads of drugs being brought through border checkpoints from Mexico into the United States. The missile downing of TW-8 Flight 800 out of New York, and the subsequent buying off of witnesses who would not recant that they saw a missile in flight. The Vince Foster murder and the false evidence and the reporting filed by independent counsel Kenneth Starr. The Ron Brown airplane accident in Bosnia. There is disturbing testimony that Brown's body had a bullet hole in the head and that one of the Bosnian tower operators was told to shut down the navigation beacon before Brown's plane arrived. The government involvement in the Oklahoma City bombing. These are just some of the notorious scandals and undercover operations conducted by our government and then covered up. Now, these cover-ups show that there is a conspiracy afoot here. What are these conspirators trying to hide, and why are they trying to hide it? Now, Skousen says, let's take a look at the JFK assassination. The evidence is really overwhelming that this murder was committed by government agents of the black variety on orders from very high up. There are several books that outline the evidence. The best one is called Best Evidence. It's written by David Lifton. Lifton is no right-wing crazy. He doesn't believe in conspiracy, at least he didn't when he started. He was a liberal engineering student in Southern California and just happened to take a class on the Warren Commission. The professor was none other than the chief legal counsel of the commission, Wesley J. Liegler. Lifton dutifully starts to go through the whole report and begins to notice gaping holes in logic and unanswered questions. The professor doesn't have good answers and eventually starts to evade critical issues that clearly start pointing to a cover-up. Lifton spends nearly the rest of his life digging into this mess. He avoids any conclusions, but they're all just too obvious to the savvy reader. What comes out so clearly is not so much who specifically did it, but that government agents were literally everywhere covering up the facts and falsifying the evidence and threatening the witnesses. Now just ask yourself, why are government agents covering up facts, falsifying evidence, and threatening witnesses to change their stories? What was the purpose behind that? Wouldn't we expect government agents to be out there uncovering evidence, revealing witnesses, exposing the truth? Isn't that what government is for? Or isn't that what we believe government is for? Now, Lee Harvey Oswald, as it turns out, worked for the CIA. Now, Lee Harvey Oswald is a CIA agent. This is the classic fingerprint of conspiracy. Multiple attempts to cover up and change the facts. And this kind of pressure shows up in virtually all of the recent assassinations and murder committed by these government hit squads. Most importantly, we laymen can trace the presence of conspiracy by looking closely at these cover-ups and coercion of witnesses. Now, here are some cogent facts uncovered by Lifton and others, which is just a sampling. And we'll take a look at that next time on the Law Hour and Editorial Review, looking at the JFK assassination. In case somebody ever calls you a conspiracy theorist, I like this book because you can stand up and say, yep, I'm one of them. And the best evidence of it is located on page 158 of Strategic Relocation by Joel M. Skousen. I always like people to challenge me, and then I can tell them, okay, here's the evidence. Let's look at it. I like to stick it right up their hind end sideways. Remember, this is Joel Skousen. His number is 801-224-4746. Again, that's telephone number 801-224-4746. Strategic Relocation. All right, we'll take it up right there next time. Let me remind you that you've been listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact desk, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has a radio log schedule and archives. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Our time's up. I've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.